Right. So as the heroes of destiny enjoy some enforced time of rest in the seventh forge here on the plane of fire, there were many conversations that took place last time. Some beginnings of plans, good interactions and confessions of fears and concerns, and some unexpected wishes that came true. During this time, there are a few people that were not present, and so we will go to them. Mew and Katsu. When everyone else had gone at Roshan's direction to go and relax in his guest quarters, a place that would be better suited to mortals, Mew, you had an interest in working on your mechanical centipedes. And recognizing this, Roshan invited you to come and use the forge. As you heard in your mind, his voice rumbling with an invitation, just a simple invitation to come. If you will build, you may come. And that was all.
You would accept the invitation. And he would have both Ebon and Shade limp along with him.
And as you follow after this gigantic Ifriti with the sweeping snowy white wings of an owl flowing into the muscled and shimmering white-furred body of a cat, his ram's horns that roll up from his skull and around and in a circular pattern. He doesn't look back. He simply walks into the heart of the forge, to the very center, and then pauses. You can see at the center of the forge, you can see the furnace that he works at, and it is burning like a star, as if he had somehow managed to capture the essence of an actual star and cage it in the heart of his forge. And he warns you in your mind again, do not stray too close, or you will not survive the experience. You may work there. And you see to the side a smaller forge, one more befitting your size anyway, and far enough back that you are not suffering burns from the proximity to Roshan's forge. There's plenty of room to work, and Ebon and Shade, there's plenty of room for both of them. And they do not actually seem nearly as affected by the presence of his forge as you would feel. And as you work, you would notice that the very machinery that is all around you, that seems to stretch all the way up 100 feet to the ceiling and push even deeper in with various axles and weights and gears and belts moving all around you, you recognize, as I believe that Mew has tongues cast on him so that he can actually understand all languages. Is that correct?
He has Eastern Star Ionstone, which comprehend languages.
Okay, so you would recognize that Roshan will speak commands to the machines. And he speaks to them in, I believe it's Ignian. the language of fire elementals, correct?
Correct.
And as he does so, the machines will respond. They are actually speaking back, however, to him in Terran. But they are speaking back to him. And they will respond, and they will follow his commands and his orders. And it seems like several of the machines in here, if not many of the machines, are somewhat intelligent. And all of it is incredibly magical. What do you do?
He looks around at some of the designs, seeing some mechanical wonders that he's never even heard of before. And although he's curious, he knows better than to ignore the warning of the Star Burning Forge. And he makes his way over to the smaller forge. Is it okay if Ruby and Sombra come along with him? His other staff members?
Does he ask?
He would. I would like some assistance to aid in the reconstruction. Is that all right?
There is no verbal response. Just the methodical pounding of that great hammer that he's using to beat out a piece of steel that is probably about as long as a bus. But there is a mental assent that is permissible.
Right. And Mew would send out a mental call to Ruby and Sombra and say, I'll need your help here. And as he calls them over, he will see if there is a hammer to get to work.
There is. You see a hammer. Instantly, if you have detect magic or anything of that nature up, you recognize that it is heavily enchanted. It appears to be small, something you could easily pick up and wield in one hand, and feels lightweight to the touch. But as you lift it, when you bring it down, there is the deep peal of a heavy blow rang out on that anvil. That hammer seems to be enchanted to deliver much more power than is required to wield it.
You will turn to Sombra and Ruby and say, all right, let's get to work. There's much that must be done. The repair of Ebon and Shade, the finding of more information about what we need to do. Very curious about, the Crimson Guard, but I'll wait until the others arrive again before I do anything too in-depth. But for now, and he picks up the hammer and gets Shade up on the anvil first. He says, let's get to work.
And was Katsu also going to be there to help you with some of the crafting?
Katsu, would you be there?
Yeah, I like helping build stuff.
Excellent.
All right, then Katsu, you follow along and are present for all of that. Rashan seems very much to himself. He doesn't even appear to really be paying attention to you guys as you work. He continues to work where he's at. Working the piece of steel before pushing it back into the forge, heating it up to a brilliant red-white before pulling it out and beating it down again and continuing to work that piece of metal.
And as Mew begins to almost get into a rhythm or trance as he begins to hammer. He says, Would you be willing to aid in the reconstruction of Ebonshade?
Katsu nods. Of course!
Right. I don't know if you still have a few minutes, but I have heard of a spell more divine in nature called Rapid Repair. I think that would probably work best.
Give me a few moments to study that one.
You have all the time you need. And we would continue to hammer. And as the hammer goes up and down, he tends to cut and says, "You really do care about her, don't you?"
Was that Takatsu?
Yes, it was.
Oh. And he'll go, sorry, what was that? Like, because he was concentrating on memorizing this.
I said, you really do care about her, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to give up your life, your very soul, for her freedom. I know most of us would have done it, but you, and he continues to work as he looks over at Katsu, says, you were the first to stand on the platform.
Do that one more time.
He says, I know most of us would have done it as a friends, but you were the first to stand on that platform.
Katsu just kind of blushes. Well, I mean, I suppose, and he's trying to, like, play off cool and stuff. So I'll kind of fumble over his words and be like, well, you know, I saved her life so many times, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, part-time job, so, of course.
And he chuckles and says, sure, but it's more than that. And he's still hammering, still working, but he turns to Katsu and says, I know you're willing to die for her, but would you be willing to live for her?
Katsu kind of like tilts his head back. What do you mean? Just
dying is a one-time event. For most. And you see this.
Sorry.
But living for someone every moment of every day until your final moment comes, that's different. Many people say that they would do it in a moment of passion or a moment of
adrenaline,
yes. But as the time wears on and 30, 40, 50 years causes the skin to fade and the eyes to dim, would you still look at her and say, yes, I still do the same?
That's what kind of think to himself. Oh, that's really deep. I wish I could say yes automatically, but honestly, I know. Like, not like I, you know, feel shallow or anything like that, but it's just, let's say, a couple of years back before I met you guys, I would never really dreamed about doing this. I kind of just thought to myself, it's going to go on a few adventures, get a little bit of money, and retire into some cottage and live out the rest of my life. And, well, definitely got the money part. cottage, well, got a little bit of an upgrade. But finding love was not really on my plan. This is something that's new and something unexplored territory for me. It's just not something I was really, of course, planning for at all. Not something I can just say, oh yeah, totally. I thought about everything coming down the road. So I honestly can't answer future me from 30 years from now, but I pray the answer is still yes.
I actually appreciate your answer more. If you had said yes immediately, it would show that you hadn't actually put any thought into it. Knowing that...
So this is a trick question.
Perhaps. But even still, love is not easy to find. Finding love twice, that is something that is quite special.
I suppose you're right. I mean, sometimes I still have dreams about, you know, the other past life. Yes, the other life. So, small part of me feels, you know, like I'm betraying that other part of life, but I know I'm not. But, so, I guess maybe that's why I feel just kind of conflicted and confused and stuff. But,
I know. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I just know that I can't let that to stop me. And no, I don't want to, like, get it erased or anything like that. It's too special. It's too important. It's something that's a part of me and that I want to keep a part of me.
Good. And know that the other you is just as happy, if not more. Just because this world didn't turn out the same way that one did, doesn't mean you can't find the same happiness.
This is true, but I have to contest you on the other me. I don't think the other me has a diamond castle, and I'm pretty sure that this me is a little bit happier with the diamond castle. Just saying.
Fair. But would you give up a diamond castle to be with her? Would living a life and obscurity in a small cottage in the woods be any more than with her be less or more than living alone in a cold castle of stone?
Well, suppose if I had to, I mean, much as they say, diamonds really aren't forever. Unless, of course, time doesn't move in that dimension and all that weird stuff.
It doesn't.
Of course it doesn't. But yes, I do plan to live my life with Sadra and just take it one day at a time. I mean, honestly, I really haven't even thought about how, you know, what would she be called, a Cardovian? I kind of forgot the terminology for that people.
I think it's Cordovan. Cordovan. I haven't really asked.
Well, I haven't really thought about how Cardovans even have, you know, marriage or, you know, just relationships. Even lifespan. I mean, who knows? Daedra could technically be an old grandma.
Well, I doubt that she is a grandmother, though, as some say, age is just a number. It really is how they think, how they act, the maturity, whether they're ready for life or not. You could be 25 or 200. Honestly, after a certain point, it matters a lot less.
I know, it's just... there's just so much there that's on the table that I have to think through, and... I honestly don't know, like... is she even of age in their culture? For their culture, it to, you know, even happen of marriage? Do I have to go fight some seven-headed beast?
I mean, you've already fought a 12-headed beast, so seven seems a bit of a downgrade.
Yes, that's true.
That's... well, considering that her mother seems to be well on her way, whether that's the way things are supposed to go or not, I wouldn't be surprised.
Suppose. I just have to say that I'll just have to keep thinking. I know I'm trying to think with my head and not just my heart. I want to do this right, you know?
Well, there's one way that you can ensure that you don't go wrong. Do it the Kintuq way.
And Katsu's face will turn bright red. Did he tell you about the poem?
Oh, I heard.
We never speak about this again. Speak about this, I'm not doing this rapid repair for you.
You don't know who gets this. Fair. And fine. But I will let you know, even though I might not speak of it, it has already been recorded in one of these seven libraries.
Of course.
Do you really think I wouldn't be in communication? Having interplane communication is so handy at times.
You know, you must be the most precautious person I've ever met.
Well, you never know. Some things might simply come back to life. You always can't be too careful.
Alright, well, the rapid repair spell is ready to go, so let me know how or when you want it performed.
Now would be good. Though, if you could do it on Eben, that would be perfect.
Alright, he'll reach out, and I guess Eben's there to touch, because it's a touched thing. Okay. He'll reach out and touch Eben, and cast Rapid Repair!
Boot! And over the next 10 rounds, Eben will regain 50 hit points. Which brings him back up to max.
Yay! I forgot to ask what level spell was that.
Fifth.
Okay.
I believe we discussed last time that you did have the fifth level spell slot open.
Yes. I just need to take it off now.
Alright. And as you continue to work and have your conversation, there's one point when you notice you catch sight of Keen. Coming out and poking his head around before going off to look at the outer reaches of the forge. And the forge is a circular chamber. The ceiling is about 100 feet high, and stretching out around you, it expands outward until you come to a ring of pillars and great vaulted archways. And there's about 12 of them that encompass the perimeter of this room. and beyond them just goes into kind of a shadowed darkness. Keen wanders off in that direction, looking around. And a little while later, you see Bruman come out. And Bruman asks which direction Keen had gone in, and then goes off to try to find Keen. And as things settle down and you're able to continue with the work, and at about that point is when Katsu is able to use the spell to be able to bring the repair work for Ebon and Shade back to a head and start to really finalize the efforts. You notice that Rashan pauses slightly in his work and turns, and he is observing these final steps. He's watching as Mew and Katsu and the others work to finish their efforts on Ebon and Shade. And as you finish those efforts, he just nods, just a slight nod, seeming to appreciate the work before going back to his own forge. And you can see in this time that he has taken that large piece of steel and he's fashioning out of it. He's fashioning what appears to be a great mast, a great steel mast. And you see him take it and set it to the side where he has two others that have been fashioned. And you can see parts to what appears to be some kind of a ship that he is assembling, but they are all metal. And there, he just sets it to the side before going to take up another piece of stock and begin to heat that and work on it.
You see him look over and nod and almost assent, and he leans over Katz and says, "So all goes well, what do you think of your grandfather-in-law?"
Do I think of him? I guess he works hard.
We can talk about this later.
Yes, I mean, you know, kind of being in his realm, I don't want to say anything too negative.
He leans back over and says, "The answer is great. It's awesome.
What if he can detect that I'm lying, though?"
You blinks on Sir twice and says,
"But of course you're not." "But really, I would be, because, you know, he did threaten me and all."
"To enslave your soul for all eternity. We'll talk about this later. Yes, yes, yes."
"Oh, yeah. Right.
Just be sure to treat her right."
"Oh, of course."
And Mew will get back to working on his constructs.
All right, Katsu, do you hang out? You stick around?
Yeah, he'll stick around. Just kind of looking at the forge, seeing if maybe there's something he can either make, or if there are any weapons lying around to see, you know, to ask about. Because, hey, you know, kind of got on the wrong foot with the grandfather. He tried to enslave, or, you know, threaten Sadra and kind of threaten him. And, you know, it's kind of a weird thing going. So if he can find an interesting weapon, he's going to look for one to say, hey, and, like, ask about the craftsmanship to see if the grandfather's interested in, you know, talking about it. That's a good bonding experience, right?
All right, go ahead and make a perception check.
That is a 7 plus 9. So that would be 16.
All right, as you look around, you don't see weapons per se laying around. You do see tools, crafting tools that are around. You can see the hammer that Mio has been using. There's tongs for pulling things in and out of the furnace. Some of these tools are normal size. You could pick them up and use them if you knew all of their uses. Others of them are definitely too big for you to use. But all of them glow with arcane runes and seem powerful in their own right. You do find, as you look around this space, though, there are many different things that have been crafted and are in process of being crafted. You can see huge pieces of armor that are being crafted for giants or titans. You can see airships, siege weapons, and siege towers. You can even see, as you look around, poking up from beyond one of the huge sets of armor, you can see what appears to be a gold-plated tower that is standing in this forge, rising up. Definitely big enough that you could go in, and it is a tower in every sense of the word, but it is completely made of metal.
Interesting. Can he enter it, or is it barred off by any chance?
Yeah, you poke your head around and get closer to it, and you find that the tower appears to just be sitting on the floor. The door is open. In fact, you do not see a door on it. It's just an open entry point. There are some steps, and you look at it, and every inch of this thing appears to be gold plated.
You'll walk in and kind of look around.
All right. As you step forward and you put your foot down on the first step to go up into the tower shifts in front of you before rising up on about 15, 16 legs. The legs branch out from it almost like a spider, coming up on points. It lifts the tower, and you now, standing on its steps, you lift up about 10 feet or so off the ground.
Oh. he'll kind of, like, I'm inside the tower, and the tower is now high up? Just making sure.
Well, you are on the front porch, we'll say, of the tower.
Okay.
There's probably about 4 or 5 gold-plated steps that led up to where the door was, and you're on that platform. And you're now about 10 feet off the ground.
Okay, gotcha.
But the tower is not shaking you off or anything like that. It's just simply risen up. You get the sense it's almost like the tower is come to life in response to your presence.
Interesting. Katsu will look back down, so it's like, well, I don't think it wants me to quite leave. So, and he'll walk inside even further to see what's inside, if the tower lets him.
Okay, you pass in through the doorway. And as you come inside, you see a lavishly decorated antechamber with a spiraling staircase that leads up off on the right-hand side, spirals up to the next level. With this entire space, this entire floor is just, it's open. There are a few tables. It seems to be a receiving area. There are chandeliers. It is exquisite with everything that you could want, including a runner carpet that goes from this door straight across to the back, where there appears to be another door.
Very impressive. And he'll go to the other door and open it if it's not locked.
You open that door, and it opens into a luscious garden. It is currently nighttime. As you look out into this garden space, there are sconced torches burning at different spaces along through the garden. It appears to be a wide porch that you could step out onto. There's even the drifting sound of music playing.
Wow, this is breathtaking. I wish Sadra was here. I think she would like this. You'll just kind of take in the settings of the garden and kind of look around and look at the different flowers and stuff.
All right, you take a look around the space, and there appear to be more flowers and a greater variety of flowers in this place than you've seen potentially in any other garden. It's almost ridiculous how much variety there is, and they are all beautiful. They're all exquisite, and they are all in bloom.
Wow. Just incredible. He'll just kind of walk around and look more. Of course, he'll not even dare touch the flowers. He's seen way too many adventures go wrong with some adventurers picking flowers in a luscious garden. He also kind of remembers the one time he took a crystal and a swarm came after him, so he's not quite ready to do that again, so...
All right, well, you are free to walk around this garden as much as you want and enjoy it. You do find that there is a perimeter to it. It's not limitless in its expanse. And ultimately, the trail leads you back to where you began, back to this wide porch. The sense of music, although you don't see anyone playing music, there's just this sense of light music in the air. And the tower stands before you. You can see it from this side, but it appears to just be a normal tower, a stone tower, some kind of sandstone, very well kept, clean, and with multiple windows and levels going up. Probably about 4 levels in this tower before reach the top.
And all those steps to the top of the tower are gardens, or those are different rooms that he needs to explore?
Those are levels within the tower. So you are essentially on the ground outside of the tower, looking up at the tower, and there's about 4 levels.
Gotcha. Is there any perceivable way to go up a floor or a level?
Yeah, if you go back in, leave the garden and go back into that first floor, that antechamber, there was a circular staircase on the right side of the room that you could follow up, and it would lead you up to the next floor.
Gotcha. Okay, he'll take the ladder, not ladder, he'll take the stairs back in the last room of the antechamber and go up one floor.
Okay, and as you go up, you find on the next floor that when you come out on this floor, you find that there are 4 doors in the walls. Seems to be a large open space in here as well. There is a long table set with many chairs. And there seems to be a door at... if it was a clock, it would be at like the 12, the 6, the 3, and the 9, set opposite each other on this room. There's just a big table. Beyond that, you can see that there is another stair on the other side that circles up to the next floor.
Ooh. So I guess this must be like dining hall-ish, I guess, area with all the chairs. When you say mini chairs, are they small to Katsu or small to compared to the Jin?
Oh no, not mini, but many, many chairs.
Oh, many. Okay.
As you count them, you begin to realize that either you are losing your count somewhere along the way, or there seem to be more chairs around this table than there should be able to be in this room. It's almost as though when you start to try to count them, the table seems to get longer as you have need of chairs.
Oh, dang. This is massive. And is it just a long, I guess, banquet hall-ish type of thing?
Yes. Okay. Essentially, this is a great dining room, all fit within one level of this tower.
He'll kind of look around to see if there's a kitchen or something like that.
You see no kitchen, but if you approach the table, then you would notice that the doors around the edge open, and as they open, various cutlery, plates, and serving dishes come out of their own accord and set themselves at the table for you. And there is a wine glass, that stemware that comes out, and as soon as it sets down, it seems to fill of its own accord. There is, without anything to fill it, it just fills with wine.
Well, he'll definitely sample some of the wine.
It is exquisite.
He'll kind of wonder if he can, like, say, he'll say, man, I wish I had some cheese with this.
There is a serving tray that is before you. It has a cover on it, however. And if you stay there longer, more and more food would come out to the table. All of it covered. But you can definitely smell it. And there's the smell of meats. It's the smell of various cooked cuisine of different types.
This is absolutely incredible. He'll uncover the first plate that's right before him.
And you find there that it is a plate that is filled with various kinds of cheese.
This is the best place ever.
It's like the best cheese board that you ever got. And it's just a mountain of different cuts and cubes of various types of cheese.
You'll definitely sample some of the cheese.
And as long as you stay, you would not run it out of food. Or gotcha. Wine, for that matter. So, you know, there's that to consider.
Tuk, his cat, will kind of hop off his shoulder and see if sitting in his own chair will prompt it to leave any steamed fish or cooked fish of that sort.
Yes. And when you open the next tray, you find that it is a salmon that has been baked to perfection, laying on a bed of lettuce leaves with sliced tomatoes and arranged around the outside of it. It's lemon wedges all across the top with basil and just a little bit of thyme.
UK says, "This place is incredible! Let's never leave!" And he'll definitely scarf down on that.
Okay. And you can stay here as long as you want to. How long does Katsu intend to stay in this dining hall?
After trying the wine and cheese, he'll actually get up to kind of explore the rest of it, just to not fill himself, because he wants to eat with his friends, not just eat by himself. Although 2K will definitely stay and sample more of the many sushi or fish assortments that they have. And 2K will say, "I will catch you later. I'll catch up with you later." So, Katsu will head back to the antechamber and head up another floor.
Okay, so you take the stairs up to the third floor, and as you come to the third floor, you come up to a space that appears really very empty. It's almost like it's unfinished. You look around, there's no stairs to the final floor, and there are no doors or windows, and there's no furniture. In fact, where before each of the rooms looked polished, marble floored, pillars of white ivory and stone walls, up here, everything is just gold plated. You get the sense that this part of the tower is not done yet.
And Katsu will kind of go like, "Ah, okay, I guess. I mean, that banquet hall was amazing. I wonder what he plans to finish this with." And he'll kind of look around to see if there are any blueprints or hints to see if there's any hints of what should be.
You look around the space, but it is empty. There's no blueprints, unfortunately.
All right, he'll return back down one more floor.
All right, you go back downstairs, and 2K is fat and happy.
And he is staying there. More fish! More fish! He plans to become the next Garfield at this point.
All right. While this is going on, Mew, you are finishing up your work. When Sager comes out, and she's looking around, and she looks like she's searching for someone or something, is an intensity in her search. And she looks and sees you and sees Rashan, who's working at his forge. And so she'll go up to Mew, giving Rashan a bit of space, and say,
Mew, do you know where Katsu is? The others said he was with you.
Oh. And Mew turns back from preparing a few bits of incense and such to finish the last bits on Shaden says, "I believe Katsu went over there towards that tower. I saw it stand up and decided that Katsu knows what he's doing."
It stood up.
Don't ask me how. It appears to have had legs.
She gives Rashaan a bit of a look, trying to decide if this is dangerous or not. All right. If he comes back this way, would you tell him that I'm looking for him?
Most definitely. Why can I tell him he can find you?
Well, I'm about to go look at a tower with legs, so I don't really know how to answer that. Perhaps... I don't know. Maybe just tell him... Just tell him I'm looking for him.
That I can do.
And she is going to head over towards the tower. And as she approaches the tower, which is moving around slightly on its legs, although Katsu, you do not feel any movement inside. Completely balanced, you don't sense any of that movement from where you are. But as she approaches it, the tower kind of stops moving and it bends a little bit as it seems to almost look down at her. And then the tower lowers itself enough that the step is once again low enough to step up onto.
All right. This is crazy. I hope you're in there, Katsu.
And she's going to go into the tower. So, Katsu, are you still in the dining room?
Yeah, I think you'll still be in the dining room. He's trying to get 2K off of the table. You've had enough!
Katsu? Is that you?
Huh? Oh, hey, Phaedra.
And she comes up the stairs and sees you over by the table. At this point, there are more and more plates of food coming out and setting themselves down in front of 2K and Katsu. More and more fish as they have keyed in on what the cat wants. And Phaedra just looks at it all and says,
what's going on here?
2K blurts out, he's trying to take me away from paradise! And he is, like, visibly upset and almost scratching Katsu to stay because he likes his fish, man. And Katsu will say to Seija, apparently this place is enchanted, so the longer we stay here, it provides more food. And I really don't want to make your grandfather upset at us for taking a lot of his food.
All right. That makes sense, I suppose, in a way. No, it doesn't make any sense at all. But we are in the forge of a djinn, after all. That's right.
And she seems to remember what she was looking for you for. She says,
you need to tell me what happened. Because Maneha told me that you were going to... How could you be so reckless? I can't believe
what?
How could... Maneha told me that you were going to... that you were going to give yourself up. But how could you do that?
I was gonna give myself up for you.
But... You can't just go and... But what would I do if you were gone?
Well, honestly, it was kind of the heat in the moment, but honestly, I was kind of thinking that you would protest and shoot him with your pistols or something. It'll kind of give a stupid smile.
And she approaches, and you can tell part of her, she wants to be mad at you, but she's also very much touched by what you are willing to do for her.
Look, there's been several times I've almost lost you. I just can't, well, you know...
I don't know what to say. It seems every time that I think I know, you always surprise me. But I don't want to lose you either. I've lost enough things already.
I agree. I think, I just think that, you know, we should definitely look out for each other and make sure we don't have to make any unnecessary sacrifices, of course.
And she smiles a little bit. It's just a bit of a wry smile and, some tears in her eyes, but she's smiling and says,
"All right, then it's a deal. Next time, we both get frozen for eternity, or neither one of us."
Deal, and he'll also smile at that. And extend his hand for a handshake.
To which she will pass the hand, and she will give him a hug. And she will give him a kiss.
I'm not letting you go. After all, you told me one time that heroes don't die. Well, that goes for you too.
And he'll smile at that. Thank you, Sadra. That means a lot to me.
And she will just hold the hug for a little bit before finally asking,
"So, what else did you find in this tower? Or did you only stop as soon as you found the table full of food?"
Hey, now, hold on a second. The only reason I'm still here is because 2K, which will look over, and 2K is still, like, gorging on more food and more fish. And it's just a complete mess because there's bones and there's, like, fish guts all over. He didn't even bother trying to be neat or anything like that. He just stuffed in his mouth as much as he could. He looks like a mess, and it's just bad.
You know, if this place is going to provide limitless food, this could actually be dangerous for 2K. I don't think he's going to stop.
I don't think he's gonna stop either. That's why I've been trying to give away. He tries to kind of take up 2K, but he's really heavy right now. Oh, leave me here. Save yourself, Katsu and Tadra. I'll hold them off.
As more and more plates full of food are coming out, so Sadra is going to attempt to also help, and between the two of them, they're able to lug 2K away from the table and back down to the first floor and back out of the tower. And as you come out of the tower lowers itself back down to let you step down away from it. And as everyone steps off of the tower, the legs just kind of fold back underneath it, and it settles back down.
2K will still kind of protest. Why? Why would you let me die a glorious death?
That was not a glorious death. That would have been a disgusting death.
I think I might have had too much salmon. And he'll kind of go into a food coma.
All right. And as all of you finish your various tasks and make your way back, you find yourselves back in the guest quarters, Seitra and Katsu carrying the passed out cat back in to lay him down on a pillow and let him groan himself back into better shape. But you're all back together again. And there is food. In fact, Sadra takes Katsu over almost immediately to what's left of a partially carved, roasted gazelle. And says, you have to try this. We used to have this every year when we would go for the end of summer feast in Amaya. My father would always go out on the hunt and they would get the gazelle. I actually got to go twice. The last 2 years, I was finally old enough he let me go. But, and she gets a little quiet for a moment. Anyway, you have to try it. It is excellent. Oh, and have some of the baklava. Nadia said that it's one of her favorites. And it really is very good.
Maneha is going to, seeing that Katsu and Seiji are interacting, he is going to wait to see if there's a time when they are not together, and at that point he will approach Katsu, if that ever happens.
All right, so you're watching for that opening. Sadra seems like she's pretty content to stay near Katsu at this point, giving Nadia and our taxis their space. And our taxis has been trying to draw out Bakir and get to know him better. Some things never change, and part of our taxis and his personality that caused him to be best friends with Cyrus, who is also a Templar who came to the East, is that he tends not to judge people based on where they've come from, but gives them the chance to prove who they truly are. And so as all of you have gathered around, you're probably not going to get Sadra away from Katsu unless somebody actively tries to make that happen.
So we're all eating a meal together?
Yes, you are all together.
All right. Well, welcome back, everyone. I hope your adventures were just as exciting as ours.
Oh, yes. I saw a talking spear.
Interesting. I'll have to tell me more about it later. But for now, we have a lot of discussion that we need to do. What do we do next? We need to infiltrate the palace of the High Emperor and take a titter of time to his seat of power?
Maneha will whisper something quietly in King Tuk over to Keen, and after they talk for a moment, he says, "Oh, that's right. I forgot what infiltrate." He seems to have a little trouble with the word meant, but if we need to get there and bring the tier of time to there, if we are to infiltrate, perhaps, friend Mew, you could disguise us all as attendants to the king, or the emperor, or whoever this chieftain is. And then we can get in without having to fight anyone.
Sure, I could do that. And unless the palace is as guarded as the garrison was, and there are places where magic simply doesn't work. I will be honest, there are places even in the sanctum that I have that are prepared exactly like that.
I would expect it to be similar to the garrison as far as security.
This food is good. It doesn't even taste magic.
Fair. But yes, if it is prepared like the garrison, I could give you a magical disguise, but if at a critical moment it goes down, the jig is up.
But that will still get us further than knocking on the door.
Oh, of course. If I felt that there were no precautions, I would suggest we simply teleport straight inside. But I don't think that will work.
Well, if all we need to do is get the tier of time there, maybe teleporting straight inside is the best option.
If it worked, I would say that, but I have a feeling that if the garrison was protected against interdimensional travel, I would assume that the garrison and the palace will probably be the same. And I guess the next question is, are we going to include the rest of the resistance in on this? Is it just going to be us, or will we be informing the garrison that a big push will be made for at least a form of a distraction? And he turns to Nadi and says, your people.
This is all very confusing. I'm not sure what the objective would be from their perspective.
This is very true. And along with that, we do know that there is a bit of an additional informant in the resistance. Do we want to try and see if we can find out who that is?
Artaxes, do you know anything about that? Have you heard anything?
No. I don't know who it is. I know that they questioned me regularly on the resistance, and they didn't always ask nicely, to put it nicely. They usually didn't use words, at least not right away. If they were taking information from prisoners, I could understand someone breaking under that sort of pressure. Ataf knows that I wanted to.
So less of an informant and more of a broken prisoner of war?
It's possible, or it's possible someone in our ranks has betrayed us.
I think, and I'm trying to recall, I think the second is more closely tied to what we've heard.
Yes. Because how could they have known our plans unless they just recently got arrested?
Indeed. Especially when we were going to see if we could get the tax shipment.
Exactly. Let me... We should ask the other two guards that... I mean, the other two prisoners that we freed. Maybe they overheard something.
That is an excellent idea. And I also, if it is okay, and I want to see what your people think of this, I would also like to ask the Red Guard, the Crimson Guard. We know that they were just as much, if not more, prisoner than some of the other people that were also held in the garrison. What if we were to free their minds and give them a second chance?
Is there a way to do that?
Perhaps. I have a way of giving people second chances. Katsu's done something similar himself quite a few times.
She looks questioningly at both of you.
Do you mean to bring them back?
In a new shell? Yes. But first I would, if it would be okay, confirm that they would be all right with that.
If their minds are under control, how will you know if they are all right with that?
I don't...
But if they have died, then I think that the control of the mind would be done away with then.
Yes, most spells that have to do with the mind specifically target living creatures. If the creature is no longer living, well, the spell no longer has an appropriate target. Magic can be finicky like that.
Right, because then they go to the unseen one.
Indeed. And you look specifically at Nadia. Is this something that is okay? I do not understand your customs, and I do not wish to break them or be seen as one who treads on in areas that he should not accidentally.
What do you think? Our taxis?
Our taxis listens and nods. Well, if you mean a resurrection, there are stories of such magic. They are miracles. Oftentimes, in the stories, they're brought to pass through the power of the djinn. But they are rare. Still, if such a thing were to be possible, it would not be an evil thing, it would not be bad. It would be mercy to give one another chance at life.
You know what went on in those dungeons more than we did. Do you think they would appreciate a chance to come back and right some wrongs, or do you think they would want to stay at rest?
I cannot say. I saw no mercy, or there was no sense that they had anything against what they were doing. The Crimson Guard, they are brutal and cold, like machines. There is no feeling in them, no mercy. It's like their humanity is gone. I never once saw any of them flinch or show kindness or compassion. They simply carried on with their directives. They very nearly never even talked. But when they spoke, it was as much in your mind as anything else. And it was always cold, ruthless. If it was up to me, I'd have to say no. I don't believe any of them would change. But I may be wrong. They're monsters.
Yet Nadia, and you once again turns to Nadia. I believe you had broken the enchantment on one of the masks, and the personality of the Crimson Guard changed dramatically. It seemed that he was being manipulated, controlled, and only wished to stop harming people through the mercy of his own death.
He was being tormented.
Oh, if I may, I am not as experienced with the matters of King Long as you are, but I have met many in my time who consider themselves to be great warriors and were in reality very evil foes. This man who was trapped by the Red Mask did not strike me as such. It seemed that he was one. Sorry, what'd you say?
He was not.
No. He was one who greatly regretted what he had done. What, in his words, he had been forced to do. I think that it is. Him? Yes, indeed. And if it was something that was done to him, then that means it is not something that he wished on of his own accord. I think it is a good idea to try. But if we find someone who truly is already very vile, well, he just shrugged his shoulders. We could kill him again.
Fair enough. Nani, do you think your father would be adverse to us finding out more information here now?
Well, he instructed us to rest.
And we've done a little bit of that. He never said for how long.
Because it depends on exactly what it entails.
I intend to ask the gods some questions. See what they know. Then, potentially, ask the petitioning spirit if it would be okay with being resurrected. If it is, And I will do so.
I don't know about your gods, but it might not be bad to speak with Cordobans here.
The floor is completely open.
I'm not certain.
We have a few full, a few undecided. Are there any against? If so, speak up now and let us know why.
Keen looks like he's paying more attention to the food than to the conversation at this point.
Most of you know this already, but Lady... Lady Nadia would not. Among my people, it is the teaching that when the body dies, the soul goes to the unseen one, or to Etaf. That is why we do not use these matters of Kin Lon for resurrecting the body, for the soul has already departed. If we were to resurrect the body, it would be the same as, what do you Lowlanders call this, what is a Nukuto? Necromancer. However, it is not the same for all creations, for the unseen one treats some differently and others another way. It is decreed that this must not be done for the King Took, but for other species, such as with Master Lachlan Barr, it was fine, and it worked very well. Nothing bad happened to him. I do not know if Etaf has formed the Cordobans the same way, or if it will have a different kind of effect. I do not know if you have any teaching of this sort, or if you have any experience with such magics.
Though I believe Artaxes did mention that through the workings of the djinn, there were miracles, where people were brought back, and it was a good thing.
If it is, then perhaps the unseen, perhaps Etaf, has blessed this kind of Kin Lon among your people.
If there are no disagreements, I would like to see if we could use the time that we have. I know that our time is short. Alright, and Mew will reach into his bag and pull out one of the heads without a mask, but will very quickly place a cloth over on top of it so it's not a gristly, broken cat folk head that's just sitting on the table. And he will close his eyes and turned to Ruby and Sombra and say, "I would need some assistance with this." And as he focuses in, he watches as a deep breath pulls into his lungs as he casts Commune. There's not many questions today. First question, did this person, and he indicates that, join the Crimson Guard willingly?
No.
He nods and looks to the rest. Would he desire to fight against the Guard and find a chance of redemption if we gave him the chance?
Uncertain.
You nonsense. I believe that is all the questions I have. Thank you. The rest will be asked to this individual himself. And as he ends commune, once again he says, "All right. And now we shift our focus." As once again he turns to Sombra and Ruby's help to cast Speak with Dead. And as he casts it on the maskless head, he waits a moment and listens carefully as he says, "Petitioner at the gates of Ataf, who will be given a chance to potentially find redemption in the world of the living. Would you be willing to return to find this redemption through actions of your own living arms?"
And as the head responds, and it speaks, and the voice is tired, is worn, and sounds broken. But the word you hear is yes. Please, yes.
And Mew turns to the others and says, "It appears we have some allies. Would this be all right?"
"It is always all right to let someone who has done deeds that Ataf did not approve of, that were very evil, to redeem themselves again."
"And let this be the beginning, potentially of many." As Mew holds out one hand on the right side towards Sombra, and you see Sombra hold out her hands, and it almost looks like a vision of stars seems to coalesce between her hands, and he holds his other hand out to Ruby, and you watch as a flickering flame begins to spin and whirl between her hands. Mew takes a step back from the table, focuses down at the center of where his chair once was, and you watch the fire, the shadow, and the space, the night sky, begin to whirl and weave together into a strange, not small humanoid shape, before beginning to coalesce. As he cast Reincarnate. And let me know, Quicksilver, if you'd like me to roll on the table.
Yeah, go ahead.
Would you mind if I rolled on the extended table? Just for fun?
Yeah, you can do that. That's fine.
All right. Rolled a total of 62. Oh, interesting. Ha! Huh. What are the odds? You watch as an individual, strangely hairless, but familiar all the same, appearing to be one of the northerners, as the person returns as a human.
And as he blinks His eyes takes in the space around him. He sits up suddenly, looking around at all of you. Is this real?
It is. Welcome back to the land of the living, my friend. Things have changed, and yet they stay the same.
You are the one who spoke to me. Who offered me a chance to redeem myself.
Indeed. It is yours for the taking, if you wish it.
He rights himself before dropping to a knee before you and says, I am at your service. I'm Khalil. And I am yours to command.
I am not your master or commander, but I will help you find your redemption. Today is the first day of your third life. Your first life started the day you were born to your mother and father, free-willed to do as you wished. And that day ended when the Crimson Guard placed their mask upon your face and drove their iron spikes through your eyes. You died and were reborn as a monster, an enslaved horror that worked unspeakable evils, and snapped whenever your master pulled on your leash. That nightmare of a life was your second, a miasma of torture and pain that only ended when sharpened steel was driven through your spine and you died yet again. And here, today, we begin the third and final act of your story. Once again, you have risen from beyond the grave and things have changed once more. This body has been given to you to house your will to fight on after death. You will be given this opportunity to avenge your first and to fight to prevent the death of your second from ever occurring to anyone else ever again. Your hands will be the hands of justice, as Mew reaches down and grabs his hand. The justice that you never saw in your second life. And you will be given the opportunity to free your brothers and sisters from the walking corpses that they were, where they were currently imprisoned. So stand and join those who seek to make right the injustices that ended their lives. Today you proved to the Empire that killing you was their greatest mistake.
And he does stand up and stands to attention, very much a soldier, still ingrained in him. And he nods in acceptance of the charge. It would be my privilege to undo the horrors that I have committed.
Welcome back. And Youth takes a moment to think. Revenant, an individual who's returned from death to seek to make right that what was wronged. I think it fits. Shall you join the resistance and resist the tyranny that brought about what has happened to you?
Yes. Yes, so Taff, forgive me for what I've done. I will most certainly help the resistance. Are you a part of the resistance, then? Where is your commander? I must share what I know. It will change everything.
Menea will come put a hand on him. Please, call him yourself. New member of the Revenant. It is all right. You have just undergone, well, something very, very hard. But it is going to be all right. The commander is here. Please, you must sit down and be calm and eat and drink. I think it has been a long time since you have. And then you can say all that you need to say.
Keen hands him the plate of food.
He takes the plate of food and looks at it, and it's like it takes him a minute before he realizes, oh, it's food. You eat that stuff. And then he takes a bite before beginning to ravenously just like stuff his face with food. This is so good.
Please, my friend, not so fast. Otherwise, you will regret eating.
But it's so good! Keen is also stuffing his face again as if he hasn't eaten in a century, though he really has, unlike this poor fellow.
And he is completely ignores Maneha's warning as he eats and drinks greedily from a cup and just devours the food before realizing that that Nadia and our taxis are there, and Bakir has motioned to them and says, and he wipes his face and puts the food away for a moment. That was very good. I cannot remember before this the taste of food. It is so good. But I have much to share. I must tell you, there is an informant in your midst. You are not safe. Much is known about the resistance and what is going on there. Your base of operations in Devil's Den, it is revealed. You must move.
Do you know who the informant is?
Yes, yes. Hallam is his name. Hallam Al-Shem. I believe he is one of the inner circle of your leader, Kazim. He has promised that Kazim can be taken. That he would give you to us.
Does she know him?
Yes, you do know him. And he is... Bakir, you would know who he is also. He is one of the commanders within the Resistance.
Is he the guy we're talking to?
The commander, the guy that you talk to, that is Kazim. And Kazim is basically, without Artaxes, Kazim was running the show. But Hallam is one of his inner circle of supporting officers. Hallam, for instance, when everybody first arrived, Hallam was one of the guys that was standing around the table having a meeting with Kazim.
Jackal. Is there a way to send a message, she turns to Mew, to the Resistance as soon as possible?
Mew sits back and thinks. And plainly, it's more difficult unless it's to some of my people.
To who?
I have some of my staff members. They have means of communication. But outside of that, it's more difficult. Sending should work, but unfortunately that's not something that I have. Katsu, I believe you have that, but it might take you a day of rest. Do you think that is too long?
I think it is long, considering what we just did.
Honestly, the fastest way to get a message there would be to travel there ourselves. I can get us back quickly, whenever you give the word.
There's no point in everyone traveling.
Either way, it would be the same amount of time.
And there's no point in just one going either and in being captured.
I agree.
Fine. If they see our taxis, they will know that I'm telling the truth. Over the other betrayer.
Go ahead.
Also, sorry, I don't know your name.
I'm Khalil. Lady.
Do you know me or our taxis? We did get a chance to see your face.
Hi. And he looks over at our taxis. And there is a look of deep shame, regret, and pain as he can't bring himself to meet our taxi's eyes. I know this one. My lord. And he bows his head to our taxis.
Nadia just looks at our taxis.
Our taxis speaks and says, It would seem that you were not in command of yourself. Khalil, your information is good. And he, our taxi struggles for a moment. He says, we welcome you among us. Aid us now in defeating the remainder of the guard and the Grand Sultan. We must make this night pass for our beloved desert. To which Khalil nods, looks up briefly, but still seems he doesn't want to look at our taxis. Yes. It is my privilege. Whatever I may do. You have my life.
Manea is strumming the table a little with his fingers. Master Revenant, is there a place in the city or somewhere close by that is very important to the Emperor that he would feel it very sorely if it were to be attacked?
Other than the garrison, because we just did that.
Yes, other than that, and other than the palace.
The Grand Sultan cares nothing for the garrison. It is the garrison of the Western soldiers. And they mean nothing. It is only his palace that he cares for. His throne. And, well, his pets. There are some who have drawn his particular interest. And he briefly looks back over at our taxis. They are his pets. He cares nothing for anyone else.
Manea arches an eyebrow. His pets? Does he keep dogs?
No. He carries particular venom. For some. My lord, our taxis is one of those.
Oh, I see.
To which our taxis just shakes his head a little bit side to side and looks around at the rest of you like, And I don't even know why. I mean, aside from leading the resistance.
Interesting. There's much more that we wish to know on this. I also have questions, as I'm sure Nadia and Artaxes, you do as well. I know we can get to them later, such as information on the Crimson Guard, if you remember it. Passwords. Ways of creation of more. Do you still maintain the magic that was given to you? Those sorts of things.
No. No, I cannot feel the mask. Praise a Taff for that. I can tell you everything, if you wish to hear it, but I do not want to.
We will need to hear it, but right now I think we need to go warn resistance.
And possibly bring into custody one Halam al-Shem?
Or Manea's. It's like there's a glint in his eyes. He strokes his chin. Perhaps we should not. And he turns and looks over at Mew. What if we did not tell him? What if we did not tell anybody about this and said the thing that is not?
Keen looks shocked at Manea.
Manea shrugs his shoulders. I do not know the word for this in the Lolan tongue.
He means we should lie.
Oh, yes, that is it. We should lie, and then that way, the spy will think that we are doing something that we are not. And then all of the Emperor and all of his people will be prepared for something somewhere else while we attack the palace.
I honestly, truly love that idea, but... And he looks back at Khalil and says, the Devil's Den is known, you said. Will the Emperor be raiding it soon?
Yes. The raid was scheduled to be imminent. I was not in the unit that would be heading in, but the Crimson Guard were handling it. And it was to happen imminently. We were tasked with the work at the garrison. And we were told to expect more for initiation.
Then there is still a way that our spy possibly could serve us. If... And Manea keeps thinking. If we can somehow convince him to send the wrong message to the Emperor, we could let them know, he could let everyone, the Emperor, know that we have found out about this thing, and that we are getting ready to leave. And he knows the direction we will go when we leave, and they will be ready to set up an ambush for us to get to destroy all of us. But then we will go the other way.
I also would love that plan if it were... I think it might place some of the other members of the Resistance in danger. We could possibly convince him... Alam, that we're going in the wrong direction, but to convince him to go on his own while we take the rest of the resistance in the other direction, I fear that it would be known quickly.
Oh, no, and Amaya looks animated, excited. No, we do not need to do that. We can take him into custody, and then you, he looks very pointedly and smiles at you. You can deliver that message instead.
Me?
Yes. Can you not make yourself look like him and sound like him?
I mean, I'm sure I could. I would, and you take some moment to think. My only worry is if they ask me passphrases or forms of information that I do not know, but I think that could work.
Perhaps Revan Ant can supply you with those things.
This is quite possible.
Well, let us go get Halam. and warn the resistance. And then we can see if that plan will work.
I'm all for that. We have more information to gather, but time is of the essence. Do we leave now?
We should, but we should try to return quickly if possible.
Indeed. I do not know the proper protocol. Do we thank your father for the time he allowed us to spend in his forge, unannounced and unbidden?
Oh, of course. That is all the more reason why we should thank him.
I believe we will be coming back.
Will we? And you look surprised and says, this is our new base of operations. I don't mind it. I just... As long as he is fine with this.
We're supposed to stay the night.
So we leave clandestinely.
We could leave a note.
We could that.
At least.
Well, we could leave a note saying, got to go back to the prime material plane, be gone 20 minutes at most, be back to actually sleep in your bed.
Let me write it.
It is all yours. And
right, she's gonna write a brief note and be like, okay, I'm ready.
Right, while she's writing the note, Mew will telepathically communicate with Operator to get things ready with some travelers in order to get them back to where they need to go.
All right, and as you do so, Nadia, you finish up your note. And all of you gather up, ready to go. Khalil is with you, as is our taxis. And you're ready to travel. So Khalil sees everybody kind of gathering around and says, are we going to pass through the dimensions then?
Yes, you'll have to. I'm currently on the plane of fire. Oh, it might be hard to tell.
His eyes get a little wide at that. It's like, home of the djinn.
Yes.
Of course. And he just looks bewildered by that.
Yes, we have been in a djinn's home this entire time.
It'll be quite a story to tell.
For another time.
All right, where do you travel to?
You will ask Nadia where she would like to go to, just outside the Devil's Den?
Yes.
All right, and each of the travelers will grab onto somebody's hand, will take 10 on their planes check, and will use plane shift to appear right in front of the Devil's Den.
And as you all appear, it is nighttime. And there is a silence in the streets. Nadia, as you look at Devil's Den, you can see that the usual nighttime traffic is gone, and the streets are deserted. You can't see a soul.
She's going to make our way to the den.
All right, you make your way back, moving through the alleys, cutting back, and climbing up sets of stairs that seem almost so steep they pile on top of themselves, before walking along railed walkways and over short bridges between buildings, and making your way through this labyrinth that is Devil's Den, back to where you know the resistance is located. And you continue to find no one, not a single soul. You do notice a few chickens, a few animals, but you see no one. Then you come to the resistance location.
Hold it. Perception 33, I am looking for an ambush.
All right, you look and you also see no one. You see no ambush, no Crimson Guard, no one. It is not until you come to the resistance base that you find the place is empty. The door is kicked in. The windows are smashed in. It seems that there was entry from sides that did not even have doorways. Whoever it is literally flew through. And you see two bodies that are there. These two bodies that are laying on the ground. Nadia, you recognize them. They weren't anyone particularly important in the resistance, just simply resistance fighters. One of them by the door, who seems to have been caught by the initial break-in. And he is, looks as though his entire chest cavity is just crushed in, like he'd been smashed with a huge hammer or a concussive blast. And the other one that you find is a younger man who had joined the resistance not long ago, and is just crumpled in the corner, just like his body had been crumpled up like a piece of paper and thrown away. Multiple broken bones. Other than that, you can see there is blood. You can see that there was a fight in this place, but there's no sign of anything else. Well, maybe there is. Make some perception checks.
Shot keen, Mermera. Though Mew, you would hear him say, "The Unseen One have mercy on us."
Seconded. 29 perception.
24 perception.
31? No, 21, sorry.
All right, as you look around, the place is a wreck. Mew, you make your way over to where the command table had been at.
Oh no, it is 31. Sorry.
As you look around, you can see the little squares of wood that had been used to represent locations and people scattered on the floor. The rough map of the city, torn nearly in half and thrown to the ground. But you catch sight of a glove that is half pushed under a pillow, a cushion in the corner. In fact, it appears that the broken body of the young man is almost conspicuously over the glove, as though perhaps a last act of his was to push it under the cushion. But he wasn't able to push it all the way. Nadia, as you look around, you come over and you can see that all of these entrances, they're blasted in. Every door, every window, except for one. You see that there is one door that left this place that is not blasted in. But when you try to open it, you find it is locked from the outside. Whoever passed out through that door locked it behind themselves, potentially leaving the rest inside. What do you do?
Nadia, did you want to get through this door?
It's just a door to the outside, right?
It is just a door to the outside.
Don't know that we will find anything on the other side.
Your nonsense is understood. This seems conspicuous, and he points over to the individual with the glove. Does this glove have any meaning to you?
Nadia's gonna pick it up.
You pull it out, and you recognize that it is one of Kazim's gloves. So, just a simple riding glove. Not anything specific. But you see inside of it, there is a signet ring, Kazim's, and there's also a small scrap of parchment that has been rolled up. And it has writing on the inside of it, just a hurriedly written note that says, "The base is compromised. Crimson Guard are here. If you find this, continue the work."
I wonder if they were attacking here at the same time we were attacking the garrison.
Quite possibly.
Maybe that's why we were actually able to make it out. As easily, she kind of says that. As we did.
Quite possible. And does the blood look dry for, like, a few hours?
Yes. This happened several hours ago.
I think you're right. We had just barely gotten out in time.
Basically, when we were setting up the alarms over there, they had probably already begun their... staging this. Well, let us return and make more plans.
Indeed. Though, while we're here, and Mew will send one more message to Operator to send Hush to give Khalil a cat and face again.
I will detect the faithful to see if there's any one in the vicinity.
Not outside of your group. You do detect that Khalil is one of the faithful. But you detect no one else in the area besides those that you know are around you. Khalil is... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, let us return.
Khalil is going to speak up. The garrison is compromised. I know where they will have taken them. We were to expect more to be initiated. These who were taken, they will be underneath the palace. That is where the Crimson Guard ostuary is. That is where
the true heart of the Crimson Guard is located. It is also the only place left for the rituals. And he again looks like he's deeply ashamed of his knowledge of all of that stuff.
It's not your fault.
That may be, but I cannot remove those memories. But I wish that I would
cast a blessing of courage and life on me.
And he receives those blessings and it bolsters him. Thank you.
You are a great lady. And you are kind. Your friends, they will not be initiated immediately. The process takes time. And the will must be broken before the mask can be mounted. So there is time still. But they are most definitely beneath the palace.
Then we have some time to prepare, but only a little.
Let's go.
I know some of us do need a full night's rest before we will be of full use once again.
Most of us.
And I do believe, now that we know what to expect after coming through the garrison, we should be a bit more careful. I, for one, will not be keeping as many items in a pocket plane. A few things outside of the bag of holding might be a good idea.
Yes, sounds very wise. Let us speak after we travel. I do not want to be here anymore.
Understood. And Mew will take a moment and realize, it's going to take us some time to get back. So instead, he's going to send a request for more travelers, as the first traveler is going to need some time to recharge. And he watches a black carriage appears, and more travelers step out of the carriage and hold up their hands. And the carriage driver says, traveling a lot of places today, aren't we? And you just shrug.
How many times can you do what you did to... He kind of gestures to the resistance member that he reincarnated.
Khalil? A few times more.
There's two loyal people here. I don't know how many people we will have.
Indeed. And we do have a few more who are under the influence. Let's take a moment to see what they think as well. And Mew will once again take out the remaining Crimson Guard heads that he has, and we'll just follow the same method. Go to the first head and we'll say, that is a good question. Do we want to do it right here?
I'd just as soon leave.
Fair. Then we should do it when we arrive back. And then he will reach out and reach for the hand of the newly arrived traveler as the spent travelers get back in the carriage to go back to the sanctum.
So I'm guessing we grab the bodies of the two loyal people who were here and take them along with.
I'm assuming so.
Minea will pick one up.
As long as they're not returned, they have more luggage.
Alright, And as you all gather back around with your new luggage, the travelers bring you back. They can go anywhere. But they bring you back in a fire. It seems that they cannot pierce the forge.
Nonsense. That honestly makes sense. The personal plane of a being of near deity level does make sense.
Oh, then I know where we should go. If we cannot go back to the home of Lady Sage's grandfather, we should go back to those nomads wandering in the desert. They were very nice to us and very kind.
Well, I think we're here on the Plane of Fire, just outside of the forge.
Oh, I get it.
What does it knock on the door again? Explain sheepishly that we left in the middle of the night and left nothing but a note, and are carrying a few more people and some dead bodies that will become more people soon.
So, do you knock on the door? And who knocks?
I will.
Alright, and as Nadia knocks on the door opens, and you hear his voice in your head, "Welcome back."
Nadia looks kind of sheepish. She looks kind of sheepish.
Still, you all are given entrance. And you hear nothing more from him as you make your way down. But you follow down this hallway, and again, the further you walk down it, you look back, and it seems like that door is now an eternity away from you, stretching away. And the stairs leading down come closer and closer and closer until you reach those stairs and make your way down the 100-foot distance down into the forge to where you can hear Rashaan working. But when you reach the main floor, he is suddenly behind you, not on the stairs behind you, but just on the other side of the stairs. As you are still on the stairs, maybe 5 or 6 feet up from the floor, you stand now, some of you, higher in comparison to him, not quite eye level. As he looks at all of you and says, "I did not expect you to leave so suddenly. I hope that all has been to your liking."
Yes, definitely. Thank you, Father. We just really needed to check in with some people. But it turns out we were too late.
Do you intend to bring more mortals into this place?
No.
Mentally coughs and says, "Maybe 5 more."
She like side glares at you.
Fine, I can do it later. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
You should not.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Can I be of assistance with your friends to whom you were too late?
You could? The first time Nani actually looks up at him.
What has happened?
Well, while we were freighting our taxis, evidently unbeknownst to us, they were planning ambush on the resistance. And these two were the only ones that we found.
I will think on this and speak to you before you leave. And with that, he begins to walk away.
Nadia kind of looks like she's breathing more easily now.
Seems the note worked. We're not dead or trapped in carbonite forever.
Carbonite?
Ah, sorry. Wrong universe.
She looks strangely at you.
Walking the planes, you get a lot of different terminology.
Anyway, Nadia heads back towards their quarters.
All right, when you guys return to the quarters then, Khalil will take time and he will, having been bolstered by the spells from Nadia, he will force himself to tell you what he knows, what you can expect. There are many who come to the palace to stand before the great sultan. Other sultans from cities, messengers and courtiers who come seeking favor. There are those who come from the west as well, many times. Officers, generals, as well as clerics and high bishops of the Church of Metris. He has a very deep hatred for them, but they are useful. It is not difficult to get in to his palace. It will be difficult to get back out. It is not designed to let go of those that enter it. When you pass through the front, the Crimson Guard will be stationed along the way. They are his personal guard, and they will be at the door. But generally, do not interfere with the passage of those who wish to enter or leave, provided there is no reason to stop them. But once you have passed in through the main doors, you will come to the Great Chamber, the Antechamber. In this place, there are attendants who will find the purpose of your visit and then direct you either to the side if you can be dealt with by a lesser vizier, or if you have something of importance enough to see the Grand Sultan. If you are deemed worthy to see the Grand Sultan, then you will be allowed to pass through the great doors into his throne room. And he describes the room. It's a great long space with pillars, with many different seating areas and small fountains. And it is a lavish room with a large looking pool that is built in the center. And at the head of that pool is the dais. And on the dais,
That is where the Grand Sultan sits. He is ever flanked by six of the Crimson Guard, but they are not his greatest defense in that place. His greatest defense is his most guarded secret, the one who gives him his strength, the one who has brought to him the fortune that he holds. And that is the djinn that he holds there, the one that is in service to him.
Why would a djinn be in service to such a man?
Willing or unwilling?
There are many djinn who find themselves bound by a chain in service. They are not willing, but generally willing does not enter into it. I do not know this djinn's name, for he has never spoken it aloud, at least, and we only are told what we need to know, what we observe. We tend to only see what we need to see, so it is difficult to say what is beyond these places, for I have not been to the left or right of the antechamber, and I have never spoken with the djinn myself.
Understood. Though, even though being willing or not may not come into the equation, I know firsthand that those who are unwillingly bound, once those chains are broken, can cause quite a bit of havoc. So, what does the Emperor desire? And I guess I should also ask, how old is he, out of curiosity?
The Grand Sultan, I do not know his age specifically. I suppose it was not needed to know, but he is an old man. He has a son who is set to take his place.
What would he think if he were given the strength of youth once again? The face that he had when he was a mere boy of 25, 26. Is that something that he would desire?
Well, certainly, youth is something that many seek after.
If we were to offer that to him, do you think he would see us?
I'm sorry, I missed part of that.
Oh, if we were to offer that to him, do you think he would see us?
If it is... it is indeed possible, yes, if one could come, traveling sorcerer of sorts, and could offer such a thing, I am sure he would want to hear it.
Katsu, Do you think this is something that you would be able to learn? And Mew informs you of the spell Beauty of Youth.
Seems... And he's definitely reading it over.
To suddenly be 10 years younger.
Keen looks like he cannot fathom why anyone would want to look 10 years younger.
I suppose I could pull it off, but Atsu doesn't really have a very personal preference to look 10 years younger. I like how he looks. This is for the party.
This is more of to attempt to convince the Sultan, or at very least, prove to him that we have something that he wants.
So hopefully, Kareem is at least 60 years old.
To tell him that he could once again look 50, or perhaps even 40. That's... Of course, if all goes well, his life will be significantly shorter, and he can leave a beautiful corpse.
Believe me, it was not beautiful. Nadia looks very repulsed.
Regardless, this could be our offering.
Alright, I'll do it for you guys, but I really do like how I look right now.
No. Not for you, Katsu. For the Sultan.
Oh, man, misread the...
Oh, you're right. Give me a moment. There's a different one that I meant to give you.
Okay.
Though I don't think you can use the other one. Sorry, I had my spells confused. This is one that would require some time for me. And it wouldn't make him look 10 years younger, or even 20 years younger. It would make him look exactly 25 years old.
Keen looks like he does see the benefit in that sort of spell.
Though, the benefit or detriment to the spell is that the person's throat must be cut before the spell can actually take place.
But...
Yeah. Wait, do they survive this?
I don't see that one going over too well.
If we prove that it works with someone else.
Keen's hand shoots up in the air.
Katsu's definitely less likely to, you know, slit throats.
But I'm sure there are many other things that could be offered to him. This is just one potential option.
Keen's still waving his hand in the air. Now this is a good idea.
Is our main objective to kill him?
I would assume so, unless I was completely misreading the air of the room.
I know that would be my objective, but I don't know what your objective is.
To set up a magical item in the middle of the throne room without interference from the Emperor.
I don't know much about what it takes.
If he has done all of these things, then he must face the consequences of his actions. What he has done to this man and to the others with those masks. This is an evil that must be punished. The Sultan Al-Karim cannot be allowed to get away with that.
So we're on the same page?
I think we are. Right, then let's do it.
We'll discuss details of the plan in the morning.
Indeed. We get inside. We fight a dozen Crimson Guard, if not more, and kill the Emperor and his pet djinn. I guess my only question is, what are we going to do after lunch?
To which Sadra just laughs at that and kind of covers her face, but she appreciates the humor. In our taxis, well, if we can do all of that by lunch, then I suppose we can throw the Westerners out by dinner. And then he looks over at Bakir. Save those who wish to stay in peace.
Manea will put his arms around Bu and Brumin. We have already destroyed Ranelagh the Cruel. Why should this be any more difficult?
We did take 2 weeks to prepare for Ranelagh the Cruel. I don't think we have that much time.
Manek just kind of pauses and shrugs his shoulders. Well,
I think it's only a djinn's time. Only a djinn. I think we have maybe 2 days. She kind of looks at the freed prisoner.
And Kaleo nods. There will be some that are able to resist for a few days. But many, many break within hours. The regiment is very practiced and very effective. It is a testament to those who can survive it. We should go as soon as we can.
So maybe one day.
Understood. Do we plan on preparing together or individually?
Perhaps we should do both.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Perhaps it would be best to prepare ourselves, but we should also formulate our plans to work together. But I think we need to sleep now. And she looks over at Katsu and can tell that he's spent. He's used a lot of his magic. I think the time for resting is now. The time for work is going to come soon enough.
Indeed.
And with that, we will go ahead and end our session tonight. As the party makes their way over to the cushions and pulls them together and makes their blanket forts and tents and settles in for a night of sleep in lavish comfort. The air is perfectly cool, the right temperature, food is ever present, and the light is just enough that you can see, but not so much that you can't sleep. It's perfect here. It is, in many ways, its own paradise. But you know that you cannot stay here. And those that are left in the material plane are suffering a worse fate every hour that you wait. So next time, we will hopefully do something about that.